Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Earth? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John, and Sue.
All right, trucking along into the eighth Potter film. Welcome to Pottercast 143. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Huge, huge, huge news week. I'm Melissa. I'm here again with Sue and the ever-brilliant Brack. Mm-hmm. Hey, Brack.
Hey, guys.
He's the new podcast star. Everybody loves him. We've been watching what they've been saying, Brack.
It's very flattering.
No, it's really great. We'll keep him around a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I think so.
Yeah?
Totally.
Maybe. If you'll have...
All right, well, this week we have a lot of big news to discuss.
Yes.
We've got a bit by bit. We've got another canon conundrums. This time we're talking about Trelawney. I got a Scribby 5. Alrighty, guys?
Word.
Yes. Okay.
Well, alright, Sue. Should we start with just the big giant news of the week?
Most big giant news that, I mean, had been long been rumored, but is finally officially confirmed. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows will be made into two films. Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows, Part 1 and Part 2.
Amazing
news. We had long been rumored, and then not only did we get that confirmation, but also that David Yates will in fact be the director for both the films, and Stephen Close will write both the scripts for both the movies. And Part 1 will be out November of 2010, and Part 2 is May or summer of 2011. Wow.
11?
Mm-hmm. 11. Mm-hmm.
They're going to space them out like they normally do then.
No.
Well, no, only 6 months.
Yeah.
Oh, duh.
Okay,
it was end of the year.
Yeah.
I was like, oh
my gosh, wow, that's a long time.
No, six
months. Like Pirates 2 and 3, right?
Pirates 2 and 3 was a year apart.
Yeah,
they were a year apart.
It'll be more like Matrix.
Matrix?
Yeah. And, well, how far apart were the Kill Bills, too, though? Was it? Did you those?
Somebody wrote in our comments that it was Kill Voldemort Volume 1. Kill Voldemort Volume 2. I liked it.
I mean,
I like that. Harry's in a yellow jumpsuit.
Yeah.
Awesome. That'd be fun
with that ninja thing in his hand.
Yeah.
can we talk about David Yates for a second?
Yes.
Because
yes, let's.
This guy came on for movie 5.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly anyone knew who he was. Only British TV fans knew his TV shows. Who is this guy? We've never heard of him before. All of a sudden he's humming. And now he will have directed more than half of the Harry Potter films and the entire back end of them.
I really love the fifth one, and I don't know if it's because it's my favorite book, but I think he did a really good job of the fifth movie. I know a lot of it was a screenwriter as well, but I think especially seeing like Ron and Harry, their characters just really came to life on screen this time, and I think that it's just, I would hope that it had to be part of him, you know, because I don't know, the director is such an influential role.
It is extraordinary, like Melissa said. Here he came from a television background, and now he is actually joining some very lofty company in the sense that he is going to be directing this trilogy of sons, more than one part of a series of films, you know, like, and he joins a company of people like Steven Spielberg, and, you know, and Francis Ford Coppola, and I just find that extraordinary that he can put that down and that they trust him so much after just seeing one film. Now, I mean, we don't know what's going on. I mean, we saw glimpses of the teaser of Half-Blood Prince, but we don't know what it looks like on film. We just saw kind of behind-the-scenes stuff. We haven't seen a trailer yet. We have no idea what he's doing for this next. And I just, for them to put that much faith in him to say, okay, you're going to take the ultimate book and put that much faith, and they put him into that. And not only did they put that much faith, but there's so much that they want it made into two films. That's just extraordinary.
You hear over and over again, and this was no different, not a surprise, but to say that this was no different when we went to the set for the sixth film. The actors love him. They really love him. And I think it has something to do with him being he's very mild-mannered and polite,
mm-hmm.
but he's also, when you speak to him, he's also very clear. He also, you know, there's nothing muddled about what he's saying. You can see him really having good and productive, focused discussions with the actors about how to get their characters across, and they, the actors, I mean, they love it, and I feel like they feel so, like, the kids feel so, like, they're in such good hands.
Yeah.
I would totally agree, just because parts of the, I really enjoyed the third and the fourth, but there are scenes that I watch in those movies that I'm just like, you almost get the vibe that the directors just told them, okay, just, you know, ad lib it, be kids, you know, or be teenagers. And you can tell it's kind of contrived. Like the scene, I forget which one, they're walking through the common room, and I think it's when someone walks through a ghost, or when the fat lady wouldn't let him in, and they say, like, this, she does it all the time. And it was just kind of, it didn't seem congruent with the rest of it when it was like actual dialogue rather than just background stuff. So I think like you saying that he's so poised and just a clear communicator, I really think that has a lot to do with it. Just like Daniel Radcliffe, his performance in this fifth movie was, I mean, amazing. Because like I always felt in the other ones that he was just kind of like, he's not the best actor, but he does a good job. But in this last one, it was like, wow, you know, he's up there. You know, he's playing with the big dogs now.
Yeah. I don't even know where to start to think about this, but on Deathly Hallows, that scene is so key to me at the end between him and Ralph Fiennes is just, and I think Dan will be up for it. I really do. And if he is comfortable with David Yates and who will be able to give him the direction and the guidance that he needs to deliver that kind of performance, and they all must feel that David Yates is the man to do that, then they got to know how much is riding on it. So,
well, okay, here's another topic of discussion. Where should they split it?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I was talking with my friend Shane last night, and he's like, did you hear? And I was like, yeah. And then we were talking about it for a good 20 minutes. I was thinking either after Gringotts or after they destroy the locket. I think either, like, personally, I'd rather them do it after Gringotts so they can devote so much time, they can devote a lot more time to the battle at the end and all that stuff with the flashback and Harry's death scene and the whole, like, King's Cross Station with Dumbledore. I would just really love that stuff just to be as fleshed out as possible. But I don't know. Do you think that's too late in the book to split it?
I don't know, because you're going to have a hard time making an argument that the movie should be called Deathly Hallows if Deathly Hallows is not included, because you don't get to what the Deathly Hallows are until after the Silver Dough.
That's right. A very good point.
They go over to Xenophilius Lovegood's house. And while I'm of two minds. Like you said, there's the Silver Dough, which finally they've had a little bit of a battle. You see Voldemort and the Horcrux.
And you get the arc with Ron leaving and coming back, so there's resolution
Ron
there.
Ron leaving, right. They discover that somebody's on their side. That could be like the whole theme of the first movie, which is we're all alone, we're all alone, we're all alone. And at the end, it's, you know, whoa, somebody's on our side. But then, you know, the whole Deathly Hallows thing. So the other mind I'm of, like you said, is Gringotts. What if they, because after Gringotts, actually including Gringotts, everything that happens, everything that happens that day for the rest of the book, 250 pages, is in 24 hours of time.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything.
Yeah.
So you can get the idea of, I mean, breaking out of Gringotts might be great because they can basically ride away on a dragon, and that's a great end to a movie.
Exactly. And it'll be a good opening, too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then you have them going in. There's a lot of exposition, too, with Aberforth, and then with them going into the Room of Requirement and all that jazz. Like, it'll start off slow. It's not like the movie's going to start off and boom, you know? Because that'd be something that, you know, you do need to be absorbed into the setting before the battle, because I think we need to reacquaint ourselves with Hogwarts, so when it is under siege, it's that much more effective. You know, we're going to be being like, oh crap, what's happening? You know, if it just attacks right away, we've been so distant from it. And half the cast is not even going to be in the first movie. Like, all the teachers and, like, Snape, is he even going to be in the first one?
Well, maybe they'll do it in a way in which shows scenes at Hogwarts interspersed so that you can see what's happening. Or maybe they'll make it more obvious.
Yeah.
Or maybe they'll make the trio have more of a clue about what's happening at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Right?
I remember reading or hearing something we talked about a couple of weeks ago about them adding a scene.
Oh, that's in Half-Blood Prince.
But like Half-Blood Prince?
Yeah, when they're the attack on the Burrow. Yeah.
I thought that was in the seventh one.
No.
Oh.
No.
My bad.
No, it's they have an attack on the borough to remind, but it's a good and prevalent point because they have this attack on the borough to remind the movie audience, like J.K. Rowling is able to remind the book audience frequently throughout the book that this thing is happening outside their world. You don't really get that in the movie because you're actually physically following Harry and there's no outside commentary. So they did that to sort of fill that need, but that could be exactly the kind of thing they do in a movie 7.
I guess they could show like Neville and Luna and Ginny trying to steal the sword and all that stuff. Instead of just talking about it, they'll actually show it.
Right.
Yeah. So maybe, I don't know how you do that because it does have to interact with Harry in some way, you know?
Yeah, and then you can't show too much with the, like, let's say we could show Dumbledore instructing Snape, but then that takes away from that reveal at the end.
Yeah.
Because that's a big reveal.
You know, for me, I really want them to break it after Dobby's death. For me, that's,
so Green
that part,
first,
when I read that for me turned the book.
Mm.
And I understood what we're going toward.
Yeah, because it's so dramatic, especially with Hermione being tortured.
Yes.
They find Luna. They find Ollivander. You know, they get them to safety. There's some resolution there. And then that's a good point. Yeah, I think that would be a very good point because then you have Shell Cottage. You can introduce Shell Cottage and planning. They go to Gringotts, and then it just tumbles into the battle.
Yeah, exactly.
I like
and
that.
For me, it was just, I read everything so emotional. I mean, duh, big surprise. But so for me, when I see this movie, I just think that could be such an impact. And I just, when I was, when that,
they
I just remember being
in
just
movie.
Devastated when he died. I just was, it was just so gut-wrenching. And so, and then at the same time, I felt such anger, and I just really just felt myself like urging Harry on. I just wanted to give him my strength. I know that sounds bizarre and freakish, and
no, it's,
you know,
it's,
but that's what I wanted to do. And then that's what I think. If they could take that impact from that movie, if they could take it in terms of a cinematic experience for you as you're going along, you see this dramatic. They've had that incredible scene. I think, you know, the scene at Godric's Hollow at Christmas time will be just mind-numbing. I just think it'll be awesome. And then you go, and then you have this dramatic loss of you've explained the Hallows, and then somewhat, and then you have the death of Dobby, and then you can understand why it's his emotional motivation, his character, and that can carry you over. Maybe it's too much of a cliffhanger.
I don't know. Really like that. I think I'm right there with you.
I'm going to be the downer on that
why?
One because I just...
Yeah.
Because it's so depressing an end. I don't know.
Well, we get the bear.
You got to get people psyched for the next movie. You have to make them want to come back for a second.
Yeah, I think you could get them to come back because they want to avenge his death. And we're not going to leave with him dying in Harry's hands. Like, we'll get the funeral and then we'll get Harry's resolve.
Maybe it's just such. It would make it a whole different film. It would be less of an adventure and more like an introspective. It all depends what kind of direction they want to go.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But Harry, he does after that funeral come to the critical change in his character. So I'm sort of now going back to thinking that it should really be the first film in the first film. In the second film, that it should be after the Silver Doe that they break it, because for Harry to come to that critical change that signals him becoming the man that he is at the end. I don't think you can do that in the first film and then have a full arc in the second. Do you know?
Well, yeah, but I guess in terms of film and like traditional film structure, you have an arc and then you have a peak and then you have a resolution. You know, that's just traditional filming. So from what you're saying, from that point of view, I can see your point.
No, I'm not saying from traditional filmmaking. I'm talking about not in the sense of every film has to have a peak and a downward. I'm talking about Harry's emotional coming of age is such a crucial moment that I can't see him making it part of the first film and not the second, because that's the big, it's huge. And that's the big thing that signals that he's going to win, because now he's become this leader. And I think that's a second movie reveal, you know?
Hmm.
I don't know.
I can just see them focusing. It would be really easy to have their big focus on the tradition at the big scene at the end. That's what my fear would be. But I don't know. These are good points. I just don't know.
Well, that's the badass.
Yeah. Scene. Yeah. That's the one we're waiting
that's
for.
That's when he
becomes... The what?
That's when he becomes a badass.
Yeah, he's a B.
Yeah.
He starts calling him Riddle.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. We've heard there's so much news, and we heard from Steve Kloves, who's going to be back writing both scripts. He said that he would have liked to have made this into three parts.
What?
Yeah. What? I know. Dude.
The sad thing is that I would have been excited.
Yeah.
You can make each chapter movie, and I'd watch every single one.
You know, and you know, it was interesting, though, too, because we don't often hear from him. And so, I mean, he had said that they had originally considered doing this for splitting Goblet of Fire in two parts. And then
Sorry. Hated that movie.
You know, it's, you know, hindsight is always 20/20, but, yeah, exactly. You know, but...
If the main thrust was to just wring all the money out of it, they would have split every movie. They could have split every movie into two parts, you know. But so, I don't think that. I mean,
no, I'm just going to say that he says his quote is, "I feel we owe it to Joe in order to preserve the integrity of the work and the fans for their loyalty of all these years to give them the best and most complete experience possible."
Oh, that's really cool.
And I love what was it, Heyman or Clovis that said that we're really struggling about the epilogue because when the movie finally ends, it needs to be those guys and not older actors. Like that I really was really, really heartened to hear them say that because it's important. I don't want the last image on the screen to be some three actors we've never seen in our lives.
Right. Right.
You know?
Right.
Get some makeup out. They can
make people look younger with computer, just do some CG work. It'll be expensive, but they can afford it.
They can, and it would be nice. I would like to see. I mean, they'll be the height and appropriate structure in their faces that they'll have, that they'll be the rest of their lives by then.
Yeah, and they're only going to be, it's 19 years after they're 17, so they're 35, 36?
Yeah. Yeah, so they're not going to look all that much different. They'll thin their hair a little bit.
Yeah, and just, you know
that's a good point.
Wrinkle their faces a bit.
No, wait, hey, no wrinkles.
A little bit.
I'm only 6 years away from that. I don't see any wrinkles.
How old are you?
28, or 7 years.
No.
It's not rush things, Mr. Young Frack.
I'm 26, so I'm getting old.
They can make them, you know, but just, and that, I can just see them making that just very fleeting, you know, which would be... sad, but I can see them doing it.
I forgot about that blog. Yeah, they need to split it into
two. You know, there was another quote too that Alan Horn dude had made, and he said, "We want to give it about splitting the films." He said, "This way we have an extra hour and a half, at least, to celebrate what this franchise has been and to do justice to all the worlds and ideas that Joe has put in the amazing story." So, I mean, are we talking a 3-hour film? Is he, you know, each? Or I mean, I was kind of curious, but I really hope that these are not just like two-hour films.
I wouldn't want them to be 2 1.5-hour films. If there were 2 2-hour films, I'd be okay with that.
I'm okay. Like, honestly, like, the length to me, the longer the better, just, like, selfish indulgence. But I, whatever the length it is, just as long as it tells, as long as it takes to tell the story. Because the first one, I heard that Order of the Phoenix is going to be the shortest movie yet. I'm like, but it's the longest book. Mm-hmm. But it worked. You know what I mean? So, like, if it's going to be an hour and a half, as long as it's an hour and a half of good cinema and good storytelling, I'm not going to knock it. But I personally, in a selfish way, I'm like, yeah, the more the better.
Yeah, I want it all, man. I just, there's so many great scenes. I just, the whole Battle of Hogwarts will just rock the canyon, man.
I'm listening to that again right now.
The Battle of Hogwarts will be like the third Lord of the Rings movie in that it's just like battle, 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 brief rest, battle, 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 brief rest, world coming to an end, battle, battle, you know, but in a less epic because the Battle of Hogwarts is epic for the Harry Potter characters, but it really, in all seriousness, a battle in which only 50-odd people die is not that huge.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, Lord of the Rings, where thousands of people die. No, I'm talking just in sheer numbers. Yeah. The epicness is different, but the sheer numbers of it is but that's only because this world is so relatively small.
Yeah.
But it still has to be, like, intense and just happening everywhere, and, like, mandrakes falling through the window and Trelawney throwing crystal balls, and, I can't wait.
So excited to see Lily on screen. This is the first time we get to really see her character, and she's awesome. Yeah. Like, she is Harry, you know what I mean? Like, and I like the part where when in Snape's flashback, when he talks about how Snape's going off on how Aries is arrogant, you know, excited to see find himself famous, and Dumbledore says, like, he looks like his father, but his deepest nature is of his mother, and it's true, and I'm really excited to see, because she's gentle, but she's not a pushover, and I'm really excited to see her.
I am too. When you said that about Snape, I have long lamented, and I know that they have to just film it. It's impossible to get all this in, but I have long lamented how the adults have been relegated to the background, and I am so looking forward to how Alan Rickman can handle his death scene. I know that sounds terrible, but I just think that that scene.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. Because to be very honest, it's been a little one-note for me.
Really?
His performance
so
far. He's great. He's a perfect Snape, but I haven't seen all that much variation. He's the same guy in every movie.
Yeah, but how much is Snape's character really in the books change as well?
There are shades, you know. At the end of 4, I feel like we needed to see that dread in his eyes, that understanding of what was coming at the end of 4. It was just him being menacing around Crouch Jr. again.
Oh, they don't even start on that, those scenes with Crouch. That was such stupid writing and directing when he closed the door slowly.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
All the way around.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I hear you. And listen, I know sometimes we are really hard on Clovis here, and it's just because he sometimes veers off for what are probably really sound story reasons, but aren't as true to the books as possible.
No, but that's not a good story reason, though. That's just
it's
a total red herring. He didn't even address it. Just, oh, we'll just make everyone think he's evil. Because he couldn't communicate it other way. He couldn't, you know.
Right.
Sorry, I'm going to shut up.
You're funny.
No, because it's, you know, like, there's other ways to communicate in a way that's not just totally, like, he lied to the audience. He didn't, like, point them another direction. He didn't misdirect them. He lied to the audience. And that's stupid. That's bad storytelling.
In whose instance? I'm confused.
When he made Karkaroff close the door in the
Karkaroff we're talking about. Yeah, no, you're right. That was a total. But then again, when we read book 4, we thought that Karkaroff was somebody to be watched
as
well.
Yes, but
so.
Jo told it the right way. She didn't lie to us. She made him ambiguous rather than basically there should have been a screen capture like a subtitle at the end. Oh, evil.
A bubble over his head,
you know
I'm
mean?
Evil.
Yeah, exactly. And then at the end, like, just kidding. Sorry.
Or at least explaining that the reason he closed the door on the goblet like that is because he did something to it, tried to do something to it, or was trying to mess it up.
Something, just because that was totally out of the blue and just kind of like, they needed like that sinister music.
Dun, dun, dun.
Every time he walked on the camera, mind, it would have been just as effective.
Just as effective as the Pez dispenser thing that Moody was drinking the whole time. I mean, that could have been more overt. And I mean, we still just crack up.
I'm not a big fan of Moody on camera. He doesn't look scary. He looks goofy. But I won't talk about that.
He's going to be back. Brendan Gleeson is looking forward to doing his part.
I like him as an actor. I think he's a good actor, but I just don't like the wardrobe they give him. I don't know. Sorry. I don't want to.
Well, but my point, what I was saying about Clovis is that maybe this will give him the room he needs not to have to do that.
Oh, okay.
And we can
I should probably let
you
finish. You
know,
your thought.
We can see his writing really, like, shine. And that's what I'm hoping. Because I'm a fan of his other work. I've never seen a Harry Potter movie that he's written and thought, wow, the writing was great.
Mm.
You know? And I want to think that.
Well, it gets frustrating, too, because sometimes, like, I noticed it when you guys pointed out in one of the commentaries or one of the shows back a couple of years ago. Like, he'll give Hermione, like, Ron's lines. And it's like...
Don't get me started.
It's like, I don't understand that at all. Because it's like, it's not like it was hard or a hard way to get around. It's like, Ron's right there.
Right, right. The big POA, Prisoner of Azkaban switch is... Yeah, but... We should save that for another comment.
Or like when in movie 2, she's like spouting, fear of a name increases fear of the thing itself. You know, like, come on. Yeah. Come on. She's 12. Yeah. You know.
That's why I just hope that, you know, he uses more, like Goldenberg did. I thought he used a lot of Joe's dialogue, and I'm really hopeful that Clovis will do this because there's such powerful writing in Deathly Hallows. Just...
Mm-hmm. There is such... powerful. If they don't have Not My Daughter, I will.
Yeah, honestly.
Be very
and it's
angry.
Great that that's the only, like, I'm not a huge fan of the curse words myself.
Right.
But honestly, it was like, I didn't mind it at all just because
no.
It was its only use. And you know what? If someone's doing that to my daughter, you better watch out. I'm not going to hold my tongue.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it just shows Molly as a powerful witch, not just some. And you know what I like too? It gives that. The whole, like, a lot of people say, like, oh, you know, like, housewives are like, you don't have to be a housewife. And it's like, no, if you want to be a housewife, you know, and just be a mother, that's a honorable thing. And the fact that, like,
that's
Molly was up to scratch, too, like, she could take out Bellatrix. Yeah.
amazing.
I love it, and what I really hope they try and emphasize is that this whole series has been about being a good mother and being good to your children and loving. And if they keep all those elements in, Narcissa lying about Harry being dead.
Oh, brilliant.
You know, Lily's, the specific magic of Lily's sacrifice. Because one of the things that I will be so angry if they don't have, I'm sorry, I'm getting upset, in movie 6, is when he has that talk with Dumbledore, and we've all been kind of rolling our eyes. Every book he says, your love saved you, your love saved you, your love saved you. But like Harry, like he breaks it down and he says, no, you don't understand. Your love actually did save you, because you are able to love, you are able to fight, and otherwise you would have been dead. You are protected by your ability to love. And if they don't have that whole conversation, getting real specific about why Lily's sacrifice is so powerful, oh man, I'm going to be real angry.
Yeah, I just really like it, because there's a line in Deathly Hallows on King's Cross Station. I was just going over it. I was listening to it when I drive. It's the one he talks about how Voldemort doesn't even bother trying to understand the things he doesn't, like, I forget how he said it. Things he doesn't think is worthy, he won't bother to understand. And how he says there are things out there that are more powerful than any kind of magic. And like, and that's like, and that it's like love, and the fact that Lily used something that was more powerful than any magic and wove it with magic as well to make it even that much more powerful is so cool.
And the fact that she didn't know, she did it out of pure love. She didn't think, well, if I do it this way, it will be the most strongest magic. She just loved him that much, like that was it. And people kind of roll their eyes and think it's Morbin and Maudlin, and but it specifically what it was about, you know. And I just remember reading 7 and thinking, how is it possible I didn't realize that with J.K. Rowling as the author of this series, that this was going to be so much about being a good mother, like, you know.
I
sort of smacked myself on the head. Well, you should have realized that, you idiot, you know, like that.
So much.
And you know, just the good fathers too, because
there are very few good fathers in this series, I have to say.
Arthur.
James is a good father, but all we know about him is that he tried to protect his family, which is an honorable thing, but I think most fathers would do it.
People say, look at Lucius. He's a horrible father. The dichotomy, I thought, between him and Arthur, you know. But you're right, there's not very good, strong.
No, it was great.
That's true. I guess it's just nice to see a healthy, I don't know, Hollywood portrays men in a funny way. I can get into that, but I'll hold my tongue.
It's such a great discussion, because look, even when Lucius is such a terrible person, Narcissa, who is an equally unpleasant and bad person, ends up being a really good mother. What, you know, whether or not she's a good person is irrelevant next to the fact that all she's trying to do is to protect her son.
Yeah.
She protects her son. She's more loving than
Lucius.
But she could. I guess it counterbalances Lucius' attitude towards Draco. So we can say
we can hold a whole
other conversation.
One more thing? Related to the news.
No, go for it.
We're talking about things we'd like to see in this Deathly Hallows, and things that are so important in the book, and it kind of relates to it. It's the man by the name of Matt Lewis who was talking about his character of Neville Longbottom.
Love him.
And he's talking about having to do sword practicing for his scene with Nagini. Rock.
Nice. Sorry. That's
good,
amazing.
Good. And may I say, I'm looking at Leaky right now, and there's a picture of him in like a dark shirt with like dramatic lighting, and these pictures of him that have shown up. Where did he come from?
Funny, because remember how Joe said she'd gone to a set visit, and she's like, who's this good-looking guy? And then she realized it was Matt Lewis. Suddenly, he turned into this gorgeous young man grown up and just, you know.
It's indicative of Neville, though, because Neville was like, you know what I mean? He was this, nothing wrong with him. He was just this homely little, like, Gryffindor who probably just barely made it into Gryffindor because he really wanted to, because what his grandmother just kind of rammed up his down his mouth, you know, like, you need to be like your parents, and he genuinely just wanted to, you know, like, that was probably the only piece of his parents that he had with being Gryffindor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then how he just totally came into his own and found his voice and just Neville's such, everyone can relate to Neville. Like, Neville's probably the character I relate to the most, but I think a lot of people could say that.
It's wonderful to hear this. Okay, and let me address something else regarding this. Yes, when the many fan sites who went to the set, this question was asked repeatedly because the rumor had just come up. Are you splitting it? Yes, everybody kept repeatedly asking these people this question because everybody wanted to know, and which was kind of stupid because any answer we got would be embargoed until we were allowed to talk about it, which was going to be after the anyway. But in the journalist spirit, everybody was like, "Tell us if the movie's going to be split in two," and it was really, really obvious that without anybody saying it, this was going to happen. Because nobody said it, but nobody's answer would be like, "Oh no, that's silly." Whereas if it was something that kind of crazy of a rumor, people would just put it down right away. But, you know, and it was not any great leap to come away from it that day and think, I think they're really going to do this. We all were talking about it afterwards going, I really think this is going to happen. Oh my gosh. So that's what I mean when I say that I hate embargoes because you can't, even if, embargoes, it's like being Frankenstein and having your lips zipped. Anybody who you asked about it said something along the lines of, "Oh, we don't know," but then went on to talk about the prospect, you know? So without getting to specifics, which you'll find out when we are allowed to do our set reports, it's clear that everybody's really excited about it. So
I had a dream last night that I was having a party and Ivana Lynch came. She just flew in and she came to my party.
She would.
I just remember that right now.
Oh, she's going to be so great in Deathly Hallows. Oh, man, Luna. Yes. Okay, sorry. Just so many good things.
No, I love her. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Luna's amazing.
Oh, gosh. What news? It's fine.
Oh, look, they're
peas. Nice to have fun news.
That's my favorite line.
What?
When the Death Eater, when she sends the Death Eater, and then the whole
look,
they're peas. Like, oh.
I love her.
I'll give you a hug.
You know what? I hope they do, and I hope the art director and the set director does that. Paints her room when the friends, their photo, you know, just how they describe when Harry goes up to her bedroom and looks and sees her pictures up on the wall and it's intertwined between the chains and it just says friends. I just hope they put those little touches in the movie. You know,
I really want to see the Ravenclaw Tower.
Oh,
in my head, it looks so cool.
Me too. I hope they go there. You should draw it.
That'd be good practice for me. I need to draw backgrounds, environments more. I just do characters.
Hey, Frack, we now keep getting emails asking for you to draw people's Patroni.
Really?
Seriously.
That's funny.
We got a couple. And so I think that maybe we should have a contest one day. And
the winner?
Prize is for you to...
Yeah. I would be all about that. That would be so much fun.
Okay.
What would be the contest?
I don't know. I still owe many people things, like the big pack of stuff that I promised people, and I owe so many contest prizes, it's kind of scary, and they're all in my closet, and I promise they're coming out and being sent, but I don't know. Let's think about it. Also, remember when I mentioned last week that maybe we'd do the jingle spells, and you said that you would make it pink, and we can make a limited run for people? Email if you think that would be a good idea, guys, so that I can know how many, you know, to gauge that I should order.
Okay, good.
Okay. It is now 38 minutes.
One more thing, really important. One more thing. Jo Rowling has confirmed that she is, in fact, once again, that she is, in fact, working on the Scottish book. Okay, I'm done.
Oh,
okay.
Nice.
Thank you.
No,
good.
I would so, like, I want to do drawings for that book.
Just imagine, though. Just imagine, like, a big, like, tome of all new Harry Potter. It would be the only reference book I ever sat down and read.
I would just pour
cover
over
to cover.
Because, like, honestly, that's the stuff that, like, when I read the other books, and that's what I missed from the seventh book, is that they weren't at Hogwarts. And I love all that exposition. Like, what books they, like, I love their study lists, and I love when they talked in the class about different types of magic and the history of the magic and where it came from and all that jazz. So it would just be like just a big, like, I don't know. I don't know. I could just sit over it and pour over it.
Yeah.
I really want to read it. I want to read it now.
One more thing. There was a really unfortunate moment that I found out about last week. Remember when we were talking about the marathon and I said that, oh, that guy who ran the marathon and then died? and everybody was kind of laughing. I was talking about the original guy for whom the marathon is named, the ancient times, way back before. But I didn't know that recently somebody actually did run a marathon and died.
Oh, yeah.
I got an email about it. Like, how could you joke about this? This is terrible. Oh my gosh, no, never. No, I'd never, ever do that. So in case there was any confusion last week, we were not laughing at the expense of somebody, some poor soul who died.
Oh, heavens, no.
That's what I was laughing at.
Oh, no.
I'm kidding,
thousands of years ago. Terrible. I think it's a couple thousand.
Oh, now I'm appalled. Yeah. Oh, no. Well, I would never do that.
I know. I mean, we weren't even laughing about that guy either, about the guy in the ancient times either. It's just the story, you know. But no, we'd never. Just so anybody's, you know.
Oh, now I'm crushed. No.
No, we never. So I apologize if anybody, and I don't even know. I said I would look up the story, and I haven't looked up the story. I don't know where it was, but no.
Okay.
I also want to mention we got an interesting email, and I think we should do this from time to time. When you have a comment about our bit by bit or our canon conundrums or something, send us an email if you want to refute what we said, or if you want to agree with what we said, if you have more to add, send us an email to staff@podcast.com and we'll pick some and read them. This one's from Glenn Johnson, and he said that he had just finished listening to our bit by bit, and he wants us to discuss this in the next bit by bit in Grim Old Place.
Oh,
so
okay.
With that in mind, I guess I should read this when we do the bit by bit, huh?
Yeah, well, why don't we just make that transition over there now?
Well, let's go do that.
No.
41 minutes into the show. Bye.
Okay, we're back, and welcome to Bit by Bit, where we discuss Deathly Hallows bit at a time.
A little bit this week.
That's the bitty bit by bit.
I like that.
Well, it's only because we spent 80 hours talking about the seventh movie in the opening.
It's okay. It's all good. It's all good in the hood.
It's all good in the hood. Reminds me of that one. There was a great YouTube video of Harry Potter's in the hood. Okay, never mind.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen that?
Move along.
Seen that.
Another PG-13.
Yes, parents, that is not for your children. Sorry.
No, it's not. There's a few, though. There's one that's pretty safe, but the other one's really bad.
Oh, boy. So now we've just come from where? We've just come from the attack. Oh, they've destroyed the cafe. Boom. And we've obliterated. Obliterated.
Obliviated.
Thank you. Use a word. Any word.
Okay, so they have to clear things up, clean things up, and get in there, and they have decided to go to the grim old place.
Ooh. But first, do we have an email?
We do have an email. This person, well, I think we should get
later.
Into the talking and then we're on.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's a little later.
Okay.
You know, I really...
So they get to Grim... Yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, this is where I was proven wrong. I said we had a canon conundrums beforehand, and I predicted we would not go to Grim Old Place. And here, as I'm reading along, I realized I was wrong yet again.
You know, when we were reading, I couldn't even remember any of the things I'd said or predicted leading up. It was such an overbearing thing that I had that book in my hand.
Yeah, well, I guess that's true, but I couldn't even remember. I just remember this was a moment when I'm like, Susan, you were totally wrong again. Flop.
Well, we've all. Don't beat yourself up. If there's anyone out there who wasn't wrong about it, her name is J.K. Rowling.
So. Well, that's true.
You know. Yeah, but... So what happens when they go in?
The protective charms that Moody set up activate, which I still don't get the tongue locking curse. I don't understand the point of that. And why, like, why does it only make their tongue stick through their mouth for a split second and then go away? Is it because they're not Snape?
Maybe. I don't get it either. Because it goes away. Maybe it's to stop him from being able to do an enchantment.
Yeah, but it didn't work because Snape got in. Like, I like the dust Dumbledore, because that's something that, like, you know, like, I didn't kill you, and the fact that I like, because Dumbledore, like, in essence, Snape didn't kill Dumbledore. Dumbledore killed himself, but just used Snape, like, for that. So, like, I think Snape, like, if it's something that if it's a jinx or a charm that works with that sense's truth, in the sense that, like, I didn't kill you, but when it knows it did, it would attack.
But how did Snape actually get in there? Because he did get in there after he killed Dumbledore.
Right.
He did.
So how
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think if that charm would have not worked, like, would have been more effective if, like, he actually did, like, maliciously murder Dumbledore, I think the fact that if that's how he got by, maybe.
Right.
But I still don't understand that tongue-locking curse.
Well, I mean, could it be just to get him to stop because Snape knows all the other spells or something? Maybe they, because at this point, Mad-Eye does not know that Dumbledore is in cahoots with Dumbledore, or that Snape is in cahoots with Dumbledore, right? So maybe they were thinking if he couldn't talk, he could not reveal any of their other, like, counter order charms or something. I don't know. So maybe that's why they had it. I don't know.
When did he put these charms in?
Moody must have done it right after. Oh, maybe Snape got there right after the battle. Maybe that's where he went. Immediately there and then left, and they only put the enchantments up afterwards. So maybe it would have attacked Snape.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the flashback, I just listened to that in my car yesterday. When it happened after, in his, like, in that string of flashbacks, when did it happen? Dang it.
Hold on,
I think it happened. Yeah, you can't tell.
But that whole scene, though, then, who comes up, that rises up with his hair and his empty eyes, I mean, that freaked me out. I was like, this book, what's she doing to me, Joe? You know?
Oh, you know what? You know what? He goes back after the Seven Potters scene, so it's not, if these aren't meant to be in order. We see Snape do Sectum Semper on George to, you know, get a deer,
yes.
and then he's yelling in Sirius's old bedroom, reading the note and crying. So, if those are in order, then no, those enchantments definitely would have been in place. Actually, must have, because Moody died that night.
Moody died, yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't get the tongue-locking thing either. Maybe it's just to stop him from whatever immediate thing he would have done upon entering the house.
That's a good point, but then at the same time, Snape's, you know, he doesn't need to use he's good as, you know, at wordless, what is the term they use?
Silent, whatever, I know what
silent
you mean.
Silent spells.
But maybe it's enough to give a warning to maybe whoever's in the house, or...
Yeah, or enough just to at least distract him.
Yeah.
That's a good point, you know, just because a split second it makes a difference in the world.
Does Moody maybe have some of Snape's hair or something that he can make the spell specific to Snape?
Yeah.
You know? That it wouldn't have unlocked. Like, just like the figure goes away when he says we didn't kill you, the tongue-tying curse goes away when it realizes it's not Snape.
See, that's what I thought, because of the whole, like, Severus Snape, and then all of a sudden it's like...
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, it's not you. And so I always assumed it would lock his tongue so that the dust Dumbledore wouldn't go away when you say, like, I didn't kill you. And then it would, you know, I think that was a trigger to break that jinx. But I think so it would lock his tongue so he couldn't. But obviously he got through because he got the picture. So that's why I'm confused. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe like you're saying, because of that agreement with Dumbledore, it just wouldn't have worked. I think this is a question for Joe.
Yeah.
So are you still here?
Yeah, I'm just listening to y'all talk. I had moved on. And
got quiet.
I'm still freaked out about the figure, and I was listening to you guys talk about it. I'm like, oh, okay.
the scary, yeah, the...
Yeah, I just...
Dumbledore corpse.
Yeah, I just thought that was pretty intense. But.
And it's creepy, too, because he's made of dust. Like, that's what we turn to when we die.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, ugh. And 80% of dust is dead skin cells.
Nice. So the dead skin cell Dumbledore goes across the face.
He needs some lotion. He's ashy.
Thank you for bringing it back to that point, Frack.
Yeah.
Love you.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, that one I just thought that Joe's use of that was really, really effective. That if, from a point of view, and here you are still, at this point, believing that Snape had willingly murdered Dumbledore, and that your audience, your readers, would want to hate Snape. And so what better way to torture him than by having him, you know, see this ghost, this evidence of what you've done. I just thought that was really pretty, in, you know, retrospect after you know the end of the book, but then you go back and read it and you're like, whoa, that's really intense.
Yeah.
Well, it's wonderful of Moody, too.
Yeah.
To think, aha, well, this is how I'll get him,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
and ghastly that he could even, in that period of mourning, can think of that and accomplish that.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's true. Just kind of showed that war was full on, and in war, you just not holding back, right?
I guess. Yeah, and like Moody was a warrior.
Yeah. But I love that the next thing that happens is Mrs. Black starts screaming, and Harry's just like, shut up!
Yeah.
And Blacks are like oh, enough man. Already! God!
Just
leave
like,
us alone.
Is that what Sirius did too? Didn't Sirius tell her to just shut up? Or just
I
go,
think so.
Yeah. I think so. That's for the control.
But then we have like the very kind, funny Ron. Hermione does that spell, Hominum Revelio, and Ron's all.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, nothing happens, which is what's supposed to happen if nobody's around. And Ron's all, well, you know, don't take it too bad. You just had a big shock. You know, he's so funny. I can't. He's like comforting her, you know, just because he doesn't know. Because
that's what it said in that book, you know, always be supportive. Don't be critical.
Right.
Following page, whatever, instruction on page, whatever in this book. Be supportive.
Oh, Ron.
Yeah. It was so funny. Great.
Okay, but look what really starts to happen here.
Oh, yes.
Harry starts to, again, glimpse what's going on in Voldemort world.
Yeah.
Which one is this? This is the one when he sees...
He has anger. He just feels like just a flash of anger.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts breaking in, and Hermione's already yelling at him, you have to close your mind, what are you doing? You know.
Yeah, this is when he goes up to the bathroom and then passes out?
Not exactly.
Not yet.
Okay.
It comes soon,
right.
But...
It blurs, yeah. I'm sorry.
But you know what, before we get to that point about him passing out and stuff and what he sees, there's the Patronus comes in, right?
Right,
and
that's what happened, yeah.
Now, awesome. Is that Arthur's Patronus? That's right?
It is.
Yeah.
But what is that Patronus? Do we know?
It's a weasel.
It's a weasel.
Oh, it's a weasel. That was the one from before. Okay. I had just forgotten that, and I thought, never.
Well, I think this is the first time we've seen this weasel, actually.
No, because it came to the Harry's birthday party to warn them that the
right.
The minister was joining him.
Right. So, okay, quick relief. Family safe, don't...
Yeah.
You know, family safe, that's it.
So, like, that... So, okay, now I have a question. Was the Patronus sent to the location, or was it sent to Ron? Like, is it like an owl? Like, you just send it off to the person, and it knows where to go?
I think it's sent to Ron because it's how the Order communicates with each other. They don't know where everybody is at every time, but they do communicate.
Because I wasn't sure that, like, I don't know if that implied that someone was staked out there,
right.
You know what I mean, at the house, and they left. Or it was just one of those things that, like, I was under the impression that it was, like, it found Ron.
Don't you think that's cool? That the Patronuses are, like, this GPS system on them? That they can just find you wherever you are?
I love when McGonagall sends the three out. I was like, yes, she's so awesome. But that's the end, sorry. I keep doing that.
She is just the bee's knees.
Yeah.
McGonagall. I love it.
She's a B.A.
Yeah. That's so cool that they can use those Patronuses in times of desperate, you know, when you need to get it out. That rocks.
I like how Hermione said she was practicing. I wonder how that looks. This otter just practicing how to say words.
Be cool. Otter speak. Okay, we have.
Its first word's mama.
Next word is library. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, for real.
Hermione, because she likes the library so much. Oh,
sorry. Because this is actually a very intense thing that's coming up next. I mean, you turn the page and, you know, here's Harry, all right. And then, bam.
And then he has to run to the bathroom because he doesn't want Hermione to see, again, Voldemort creeping into his thoughts. But it's not just because we see Voldemort, he's clearly torturing Thorfinn Rowell, who is the blonde Death Eater that didn't get them, you know. But the really disturbing thing about this passage is who's doing the torturing.
Yes.
Draco.
Wow.
And that's, to think that not only have you displeased Voldemort so badly that he's going to torture you, but you have displeased him badly enough that he doesn't even want to do it himself. He's going to assign a little kid, in his estimation, to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's just... That's horrible. Like, it's not even... I don't even think it's because he didn't want to do it. I think it's because he wanted Draco to do it and to see the struggle and just to kind of break him. Like, it's one of those things that's kind of like,
he's going to break Draco, and he's going to make him do things that he doesn't want to do, and he sees that Draco's hesitant to do these things, mm-hmm. so it's going to give him even more pleasure to, you know, watch him struggle through it.
Yeah, it's such a saddest thing. It's just disgraceful and disgusting, and you know, and at that same time, I did have a flash of sympathy for Draco, even though, I mean, he's torturing another human being, even though it's a Death Eater, and he's doing this yeah. despicable act, and he's behaved abominably towards Harry and everybody, and he's chosen the bad side. And yet, at the same time, I felt just a moment of flash for Draco that he was having to do this.
I did.
You didn't?
I did. I'm right there with you. Because it's like you said, like, she's doing this horrible thing, but it's complicated because it's, he's conceding to it, but it's not of his own accord. And it's just like, I don't know, it's awkward. Because you're like, you feel for him, but then you don't, but you do, and it just sucks. Excuse my French.
No, it's really one of the most eerie things. Maybe eerie is the wrong word.
I think it's a good word.
You know, it's not only does he relish in this torture and pain, but he's systematically breaking this boy down because it wasn't enough mm-hmm. that he made him try and kill the headmaster. Now that he yeah. failed, now he's in for worse. And now that Draco doesn't want to be part of his life anymore, he's only making it worse. I mean,
yeah, he accomplishes in torturing Draco and the Death Eater simultaneously.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because they both failed. So he's getting his jollies in both ways.
And that's the thing, he's pretending to be all angry and upset, but I think he's really enjoying that situation right there.
Yeah.
I just, you know, because if it was just anger,
mm-hmm.
he would just do it, or he would just kill him. But he's had enough time to sit and formulate that instead of just killing him, I'm going to use this as a way to, you know, to beat on Draco and to torture this guy. Like, it's not pure anger working there. It just
That's
shows
true.
How gross he is.
Do you think that Voldemort was also using that as a weapon against Lucius and Narcissa, saying, look what I can do to your son?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that's confirmed later in the book
mm-hmm.
when he won't let them seek his son out. It's like, if he's dead, it's of his own accord and all that jazz and, ugh.
So, but maybe Voldemort knew that all along, that there was that moment, that weakness, that concern and love for their child. I just thought that was really kind of interesting thought, you know.
Yeah. And it's just something he probably doesn't understand.
No.
So he just is like, why is this holding you up? You know, so he's going
right.
to...
Yeah. All right, let me read this email from our reader, Glenn. And I think actually this applies to later, our next Bit by Bit, but... He says, I just finished listening to this week's Bit by Bit, and you touched on something that I would like you to discuss in the next Bit by Bit. If you will notice, the taboo doesn't seem to be in effect in Grimmauld Place. Harry and Hermione both use Voldemort on several occasions, and nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
While this would be a great question to ask next time Joe comes on the podcast, for now, I'd just like to hear what you think about it. So what do you guys think?
Oh, that's interesting. I would think that maybe the Fidel... It does work, because the Death Eaters are showing up outside, but
yeah.
the Fidelius charm... It's
they
preventing
see
them
it.
From seeing the, like, what they're in.
Like, that's why they keep having to be under the invisibility cloak as soon as they walk outside, because the Death Eaters are just, like, grouping around the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like it's went off twice, so they know someone is saying it, but it's probably like, what the heck is going on? Where
right.
is it?
They get there and nothing's
so
there, and so they're sure that there's something that they can't see.
Yeah.
You know?
I would think, I would be, just like when they said it, before, but then, like, when they say in the tent, they're right there. They, like, but maybe because they can't apparate inside, because of Phyllis' charm, it kind of forces them on the perimeter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, I agree. Sue?
I concur 100. I have nothing to contribute to that other than to say I concur. I agree.
Yeah. I concur.
Okay.
Concur is a good word.
Well, we want to hear your questions and stuff, so either send us a voicemail at the numbers that you see on podcast.com or send us an email, and we will address more of your stuff. So next week in Bit by Bit, we'll be talking about Creature's Tale, at
yes.
least the first part of it.
Ooh, that's
part
a good
of it. Yeah, I don't know if we'll get to Creature's Tale, but we'll at least start talking about that that chapter. And... I think that's it for now. Guys, this show is almost an hour long already, so I don't
Uh-oh.
Know. What do you think? Should we do a Kind of Conundrum? Should we do a Phoenix Files? Should we just go to the drums?
Mm-hmm.
Scribby 5?
Scribby 5 and drums. I think that's about all we have time for, don't you? I mean...
I think you're right. I mean, Deathly Hallows in 2 films was important to...
Yeah, we've had a lot of movie talk already. Let's put it that way. You know? So that would be my vote. Sorry.
Okay.
Okey-doke.
Oh, you're all set.
I like Canon Conundrums.
You want to do... Well,
Woe is me. I'm just kidding. No, it's fine, because if we're going to do it, I'd rather do the whole thing.
Eeyore.
I know you did.
I was. Thanks for noticing.
Oh, crap.
I guess I have to drink some Pellegrino to cheer myself up.
Oh, do it. Do the spell.
Pellegrino!
I've been walking around saying that all week. Pellegrino! Okay. I think Joe
would like
that.
I watched that stupid, you know that peanut butter jelly time? Have you seen like peanut butter jelly time, peanut butter jelly time? I was like, they need to make a Pellegrino one.
Pellegrino time, Pellegrino time.
Crack, I'm going to make a prediction that that's going to be on YouTube by next week.
I doubt it.
It totally will be.
No, really?
Yeah. Have you noticed what happens around this?
That's true. Well, okay, whoever does that gets me to draw, I'll draw their Patronus.
Nice!
Awesome! Oh, man.
Nice recall, Frack. Very nice. Oh. All right.
Oh, we man. Better.
That case, we're going to go. Yeah. To the
okay.
Pop that off.
Okay.
Welcome to Scrivvy 5, the 5-minute podcast of the Leaky Cauldron's premier essay project, Scrivulist. I'm Erin, or Calcios, and with me today I have another editor, Laura, or Musicals.
Hello.
And one of our authors, Hilda.
Hi.
Welcome, Hilda, and thank you so much for agreeing to come on our segment.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Hilda's essay is about Lord Voldemort's damaged soul.
Oh, yes it is. That man was just such a fool for destroying his most valuable essence the way he did.
You can say that again. Or perhaps even say it a couple times more. He never learns.
Now, Hilda, you called your essay, What is the Crux of the Soul? 7 Horcruxes, 7 Chakras. And it can be found on our site under issue 22. It's a great essay, very thought-provoking.
Thanks.
How did you learn about the chakras, Hilda?
I've been always interested in varying takes of life you find in different cultures and the ideas of chakras and how they intertwine with life. It's always been a fascinating subject for me. I don't know how long, really.
You know, I kind of feel like the soul is something that most people just take a bit for granted. Certainly Voldemort did that. He seems to assume that it was just sort of the same all over, so one piece was no different than another, and that taking pieces away from himself wouldn't change him at all. And that isn't how chakra theory works, though. Can you explain that, Hilda?
I'll try. Chakras are energy fields spaced out over the body. The main chakras I'm referring to in the essays are spaced out from the pubic bone to the crown of your head. The spine seeming to form a supportive column. Now, Voldemort isn't ripping pieces off a sheet of paper. Paper, though missing parts, can still hold itself together and functions in its usual manner, as its tension holding the remaining molecules together isn't lost. Chakras, however, interact with each other rather similar to high and low pressure pressure fronts in the weather system, although they are not supposed to move or gain and lose in energy like the weather does, but rather keep a constant energy flow and interaction going between them. To the contrary, even, any weak or overactive chakras parallels illness or physical or psychological levels.
That is so interesting, Hilda. So how did you connect the chakras to Horcruxes, then?
You'd have to ask my mind what it was up to. I kept coming back to the differences between the Horcruxes, trying to grasp what they were reminding me of, really. I can't remember when it clicked, but all of a sudden I was going, a Horcrux pounding right over Harry's heart, another located on his brow. Hey, those are 2 chakras. I started puzzling around with the Horcruxes and chakras. Also, whilst editing the guru chats of the gallery cast, more things started to click in place, and I sat there nodding my head off in agreement with them, taking notes and totally forgetting my duties of editing. And, well, you see the result in the essay.
Well, I'm so glad you noticed the connection and that you wrote the essay, Hilda. I find some of your discoveries just uncanny. It's like One of them is the order in which Horcruxes are created. It matches perfectly with the order of the chakras as you pass up the body. And can you comment on that a bit? I mean, did you find yourself forcing them to fit or discovering that they just sort of naturally had to be that way?
Well, at first I played a kind of memory game, paralleling chakras and Horcruxes at random, seeing which combination seemed to work. Well, one of the experiments was just, why don't I try it chronologically? And the puzzle fell into place, really. So indeed, we pass up the body, as you say. We start with the root chakra, which stands for your rootedness to life and your background, both things Tom Riddle is refusing and trying to get rid of by the time he makes the diary Horcrux. Then you have the ring Horcrux, powering the sacral chakra, being the center of your relationship to your family.
Ah, and Tom Riddle gets rid of his last relatives, murdering his father and grandparents, and blaming his uncle for the deed.
Exactly. Hufflepuff's cup goes with the solar plexus chakra, being the center of your ego, or who you are. He gets rid of the Tom Riddle persona, now to only be known as Voldemort. To secure the locket Horcrux, he leads a helpless victim to the basin in the cave, and thus to a certain death without even blinking.
Just like a true psychopath.
Yeah. He totally lacks emotions and thus empathy, which belongs to the heart chakra. And many see that as the making of a psychopath. And what is a house elf or any of his god of inferior to him anyway? Ravenclaw's diadem perils the throat chakra and the center of communication, responsibility, and morals. Any skills he had as a student to charm his teachers is lost trying to convince Dumbledore to give him a teaching position. As for morals and responsibility, well, getting his followers to kill and torture on his command is neither. The brow chakra is the center of the mind. Well, accidentally transplanting a part of him in Harry's skull, he has ensured his loss of privacy there, really. And then lastly, you have the crown chakra, the center of surrendering to the pattern of life. Voldemort is fighting to never succumb to this pattern that leads to death, and rather fights on to regain a body to kill Harry when he creates his Horcrux Nagini.
I noticed from the diagram in your essay that the chakras have colors associated with them. Do you know the origin of those colors?
Now, am I a chakra nerd if I say I do? Okay, confession time. The chakras follow the color spectrum from red to violet. When growing up, you start developing the root chakra in getting to know your life and your place in it. This is considered a relatively low energy frequency. Next step is the sacral chakra, where the individual develops relationships, and this is associated with a higher frequency. With each chakra, the frequency increases, and this is symbolized by lotuses with ever more petals, the root having four, the crown an infinitive number, and through the color scale, of which science has now proved that red has the lowest and violet the highest frequency.
It was really neat that you associated three of the colors to three of the chakras. Can you share that with us and talk about how you noticed it?
Sure. Whilst playing puzzle with the Horcruxes and chakras, I kept an eye out for symbolical parallels. Not to go all nerd on you, but each chakra has not only characterization, but also its own color, as I mentioned, and also minerals, elements, and many other things. I didn't want to bog the reader down with all of these, but just seeing the three house colors were mirrored in the corresponding chakras to their heirlooms, I couldn't leave that out.
Yeah, I thought that was amazing, too. The last chakra, the crown chakra, wow. That is depicted as a snake, and I just couldn't believe it when I saw the picture. I felt like it was just too much to be accidental or coincidental. Can you talk about the different depictions of the crown chakra and what the chakra means?
Couldn't believe that first either. When I reread the passage of Voldemort in Aragog's Hollow, with Nagini described as a halo hovering behind him, I was gobsmacked. J.K. Rowling has intertwined two symbological uses there that complement each other perfectly. The Western depiction of the halo around the head of an enlightened person developed from the perception of such a person radiating, having a strong presence, and similar, but also from the Eastern depiction of multi-petaled lotuses around the person's head, which also draws from this perception. Voldemort is never described as having a strong presence or aura, something we do see with Dumbledore a few times. He's known for causing fright with his name, nothing more. He has fashioned himself an artificial halo around his crown chakra embedded in Nagini. On the other hand, we have Nagini, a name very close to Naga, the Sanskrit name of the cobra that shielded Buddha during the storm when he found enlightenment by rearing up over him and spreading his hood. Again, Voldemort turns this symbology on its head as he shields his snake instead of the other way around. I doubt you could get further away from full development of chakras and thus enlightenment than that.
True. Well, this essay is just fantastic, Hilda. I'm so glad that you submitted it, and I'm really glad you could talk to us today.
I'm glad you invited me.
Yeah, thank you again, Hilda. It was so great to have you on the segment.
Well, that's all for today, folks. For Hilda's complete essay and many more fabulous insights into the Harry Potter world, go to Scribulous.com. And don't forget, our call for next month is Death, Sacrifice, and the Afterlife. Exciting stuff there. So, get your essays in to Scribulous at the-leaky-cauldron.org. We're looking forward to reading all about it. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
It's the drums. We have a couple. We just in the time it took to get for us to walk over to the drum room.
Yes.
We had a couple of fun things come up.
Mr. Wayne.
First of all, we are all Project Runway fans. Okay, Fred.
Yes.
Yes, it's a really fun show and I enjoy watching it.
Make it work.
Who did you guys want to win?
Fair.
Pretty mad. Sorry, okay, if you've watched Project Runway this year, there is a contestant called Christian who is really young and cocky and full of, all he said all season was fierce, that's fierce, that's fierce. That's such a hot mess, right? So when he won
hot mess.
Saturday Night Live did a skit about him that was, I mean, I'm crying thinking about it. It was so funny.
I mean, it was spot on, and it wasn't even exaggerated, to be honest.
No.
That's a sad thing.
The only words the character used in the skit was, that's a hot mess, hot mess, hot mess, tranny.
With tranny, fierce, hot mess.
Fierce, hot mess. So funny, I can't, you have to look it up.
NBC.com.
You know where you can see it? No, Project Rungay. blogspot.com.
What?
Oh, so funny.
You have to read this. But have you never seen this track?
No.
They're fantastic. ProjectRunGay.blogspot.com. They are the funniest two gay men ever, and they talk about Project Runway. It's fantastic. I love it.
I'll have to check it out.
I get addicted. I check it every morning, and when they haven't updated, I get really mad. I'm like, come on, gay boys, update!
It's so funny because I just imagine like Lockhart being a fan of that show because you know how he was always like flamboyant with his robes and just making it work and make it.
Lockhart was a great character.
Yeah, that'd be great. Don't you think you?
Lockhart on Project Runway, you think? Somebody should do a
Glam
Rags versus what's the one, Madam?
Yes. Oh my God, that'd be great.
Twilling Fist, and then what's the Madam? Madam Malkin. See this, the Project Runway, the final collections and new stalls, and someone puts them on YouTube, they're gonna do it. I will love you so hard if you make the competition between those three. Wizard designers.
And then Lockhart, making it work. And then here, I'll give you an autograph if you do.
Lockhart would be what's his face's role? The guy who the host. What's his name? Jim Gunn?
Tim Gunn, yeah, making it work.
Tim Gunn.
No. That would be Dumbledore.
Oh,
come on. Come on.
So what you're saying is Lockhart's more like Michael Kors? I don't know if he'd be a good judge.
Lockhart would be one of the guest judges.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, celebrity judge.
I can see Lockhart just being, because Dumbledore's too intelligent.
Yeah, but Tim's really, intelligent and kindly and grandfatherly and stylish.
And he goes
whereas Lockhart would be, Lockhart would be like Posh Spice.
Yes, he would! He's totally posh.
Okay, that's true.
But he would walk in and just be too big for it all, and,
hot.
That's
like
my life.
That's hot.
Who would be Heidi?
Oh.
Four.
Yes.
no.
in the front ass. Oh,
Harry,
my gosh.
Oh,
Newt, no.
Oh, not sure.
You're either in that, you're either in or you're out.
Mess.
That wasn't French, but I tried.
Okay, Michael Kors. Who will be Michael Kors? Oh, this is great. I can't wait to see somebody make
Snape.
No.
No.
He would get in a fashion sense.
I don't know.
I don't know. Somebody who...
Somebody like Dingle, right? Who's the guy with the green hat? Who wore the green top hat? Who would that be?
Settlers Diggle would be...
Maybe.
Or
we could... No, it'd be really hilarious if it was like Dunn Fletcher, who is like a fashion disaster. You know?
He could be
like their makeover issue. Maybe Kingsley.
Oh, maybe so. He was pretty styling, though. I
know. Noah Umbridge.
Oh, God. Or Miss Pinkness.
What about Nina?
Nina could be Umbridge.
Madame Maxime?
She could be Rita.
Rita Skeeter. Yeah, Rita. There you go. Okay. Sorry. Because she works in the magazine.
Catty comedy.
Like Nina.
I can't wait.
How?
Somebody's got to make a parody of this. They have to.
That's true. Okay, if they get a Patronus drawing, too.
That's true.
There you go. Two Patronus drawings.
Better.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, my gosh. I'm laughing thinking about it. What would be Kristen? Which one? That would be Glad Rags, the Glad Rags designer. Yeah. Because that's Glad Rags is the Hogsmeade designer,
yeah.
And it says Hogsmeade, Paris, and London or something. It's very hoity-toity, wizard wear.
Come on.
So that's the
wizard couture. There you go.
Yeah. And Madame Malkins would be Jillian because hers was
Jillian
the most like ready to wear, like
she was robbed.
Most accessible. It's gorgeous, but yeah. Also accessible. And then Rami would be the twirling fit or whatever, kind of out there. You don't really. He's kind of. Sophisticated and on the other edge of the
yeah, I'm on guard in his own right.
So.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
Oh, you gotta do it. You have to do it.
These are the things that we talk about, and then we end up coming on and talking on the
last
show
week
about
was
it.
Friends trivia.
These are great.
Which, by the way, I got a couple people on the comments saying they could challenge me to it. I gladly challenge you to it. I will win. Sorry, that was a little aggressive.
Oh boy.
But.
Ooh. We should do a little extra, a little podcast extra where we have a little competition.
I'm pretty awesome.
You know?
Can
nope.
I say one personal thing? Last
Happy
week
birthday!
I know. I'm selfish. Thank you. But there was on YouTube, speaking of YouTube, I was amazed in the comments. Someone had linked me to this. There was like this group of like five awesome girls or something, and they had done a YouTube video and had everybody post and say thank you. And I have never experienced anything like that before in my life, so thank you very much. So. Was very cool.
Cool.
Everybody's really kind to me in the comments.
Well, they better be. If not, I'll hunt them down.
Wow. Rock. Okay. Now, I'm overwhelmed by the kindness of our fandom. We have really great fans. And Harry Potter fans, I'm saying, are awesome all the way around.
I like it when they take pictures of themselves in Pellegrino bottles.
I saw that.
Say it one more time. Say the spell one more time, because I love it.
Pellegrino.
What else were you asking me about? What else were we talking about right in the breakdown?
My random announcement that I'm getting good at Tetris.
Oh, your gameplay.
I just said I'm getting good at
Tetris.
Yes, Tetris.
Oh, what?
And I realized this is completely irrelevant. I don't know why I mentioned it, but whatever.
Tetris.
And then you said something about a game you play, Melissa?
Oh, don't ever. Don't ever play it. It's called Oblivion, and it literally sucks you into its maw, and you just...
What is it?
You up. It's like, what? Now, I'm not a big fan of these games. These big, expansive, role-playing games that you have to have, like, a relationship with, and you have to, like, take it out to dinner, and, you know, all those things, because it's so... But it wasn't like that in the beginning. In the beginning, it was just kind of like, oh, bop around, buy things in a store, go fight a bad guy, and it was kind of something to do for 15 minutes when I needed to kind of turn my head off, right? All of a sudden, it became, like, the most intense... It's ridiculous. It is the most well-thought-out video game.
Okay, I need to know what this is, though. Is it a role-playing game?
Yeah, it's one of these big things where you create a character with every option in the world available to you, and then you go and you have to, like pick certain skills and attributes, and then you build those skills and attributes, and then you join guilds and fight people, and there's an overarching storyline, or you can completely ignore that storyline and go on these hundreds and hundreds of little teeny storylines all over the place. It's completely absorbing, and I'm going to throw it out the window. It's one book, so I'm going to throw it out the window.
So wait, you bought it, or is it online for free, or what?
I bought it a while ago, thinking, oh, says it's a good game. It was like a review next to it. I'm like, oh, cool. Never heard of it before. Fun. And so I just, you know, I figured, oh, it'll be something else to just kind of like, when I need to shut off, that's what I do. I play video games. I, you know, just for like 15 minutes, I play Rock Band.
Yeah, yeah.
I drum, you know. And no, there's no such thing as 15 minutes with this game anymore.
I'm going to have to look this up.
In the beginning, I was like, oh, I'll never be that into it. I'll just kind of bop around and play. And then out of nowhere.
Yeah, those games are dangerous. Like,
yeah.
It's like World of Warcraft. If you're not careful, it's like drugs. And you'll just OD. They need to make a Hogwarts version.
No. Just don't do it. No.
I play the Harry Potter games all the time.
We need to make one like you get sorted into your house. And, like, it's just a big, massive online game, and you just go around learning stuff.
If I could play as a Hufflepuff, I would just be in bliss.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be a very, very successful venture. The online Hogwarts crazy. Kind of like our Chamber of Chat, but huger.
Yeah, know what they need to do, WB? Yeah. You need to do that, and I'll help. I'd love to draw stuff.
Nope. Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of people have talked about that for many years, actually. That would be a cool thing, and that would be, you know, maybe they'll do something at the theme park when you go, and you can, like, just envision yourself and do some sort of, that'd be kind of a cool room. You know how, like, you can go to, like, some, like, at Disney, I think it's downtown Disney, you can go and play games, like Star Wars games and duel and stuff.
Yeah, and, like, there's, in Disneyland, you can take a test and see what character you'd be from Disney movies and all that jazz.
All right, well, I think it is that time, ladies and gentlemen, jelly spoons. Time to go. Time to tell people to keep twiddling those dials.
The next password would be Joe Rogan.
So wrong.
So bad. I'm just...
No, I love
you
it.
Don't have to
this
do that.
Is wrong.
Okay.
So wrong. She's not J-Lo. Keep each other safe. Keep faith.
Good night.
We missed it.
Bobby is free.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's podcast was produced by the Podcast Trio and Steve Bonnet. Thanks to our Scooby 5 team, Aaron and Nina, and thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on podcast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit podcast.com.
Ew,